Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on Season 2 of Krypton. This was on the Sci-Fi Channel, and a few days after the finale ended, they decided that they were canceling the series, so there is no third season, although that decision was made after the finale aired, and they were thinking of spinning one character off to another series, but that too kind of fell by the wayside when they canceled the main series. Now, where we left off last season is they had defeated Brainiac, Zod from the future had come into power on Krypton, and was basically taking over and becoming the arch-villain.
Well, and Seg and Brainiac were trapped in the Phantom Zone.
Yes. So, this season, in 10 episodes, they covered a lot of ground.
But they also spent a lot of time confusing me. And fairly early on, I worried, have they jumped the shark? Not just in terms of the continuity, I think I'm expecting, but in terms of one character I thought they had to have. They put so far off screen, it's the, yeah, we're not seeing them again.
Which?
Lyta.
Lyta, yeah. There was a couple of times they made some decisions with some characters. Well, I thought Kem was written out at the end of last season. It's like, well, he's off. I guess we're not going to see him this season. And it was 3, 4, 5 episodes in before he came back.
When, but we saw a remark that the ratings declined throughout the season.
Mm-hmm.
I can see where people gave up at various points with just based on that episode, I'm not going to tune in again. And I think some of the stuff, if they'd stuck with it, they'd have later said, oh, wow, they actually came back from that in a way I didn't expect. Or, oh, wow, that actually had payoff I didn't expect. But they didn't give you reason to have hope or faith they were going to do that.
This was a bit of an odd show just from the concept. It's on Krypton, you know, with Superman's grandfather. So Jor-El's father, as a reasonably young man. Seg-El, named after one of the co-creators of Superman. And that in of itself, it's like you ultimately know what happens to everybody. They die and the planet blows up.
Well, but worse than that, you think you know who's supposed to be born?
Well, but that's where I thought they made an interesting decision of somebody was changing the timeline. So everything we think we know, all bets are off. So I thought that was a smart move.
Yes and but no, because it frustrated me of, at first, it's we're trying to maintain the timeline.
It's
in season
risk,
one.
And it may be going. And the whole cape changing back and forth was well done.
Right.
We saw none of that this season.
Right. At this season, it felt like we've thrown out the timeline. We've given you no reason to believe we're going to try and get back to the timeline you know. And yet every now and then they'd give you something that says, oh, but by the way, this is actually like the timeline you know. So we haven't thrown it out.
This season, Brainiac comes back.
In a way I didn't like.
Aspects I kind of liked. I had mixed feelings. I thought the actor did a great job, and
yes,
I think he was well used. I would have been okay if they hadn't brought Brainiac back. One of the major Superman villains, check, right there. Okay? General Zod, another major Superman villain. Okay? He's here front and center throughout the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
Two major villains there. We then had, we had Lobo through bits and pieces of the season. Wouldn't say he's a major Superman villain, but he's a mainstay at times in the DC universe. We had Adam Strange through all of this. And what was one of the other villains they had? Because I thought they... Oh, Doomsday.
Yes.
So between Doomsday, General Zod, and Brainiac, that's three heavyweight Superman villains. And here we are, like 200 years, I guess is what they're saying, back in time.
That part was confusing.
I mean, presumably, people live really long.
Yeah,
on
exactly.
Krypton. And there was a lot of, we've got to rebel against Zod's rule, some of that stuff. And there were a couple of times where we had watched, I think, two episodes in one sitting, four the next, and then four tonight. And after we'd gotten through the first six, I think we'd started this evening with me saying, okay, this is what I think they're going to do with this character. This is what I think they're going to do on this plot line. And this is what I think they're going to do on this other one. And I think I was right on all three. It's like they'd gone down a path. Oh, yeah, that you made a mistake doing that. You're going to undo it. You just went for the shock value. Oh, yep, they did.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's telegraphed or predictable, but there are certain parts of a narrative universe that once you've established, trying to undo that is hard.
I had issues when you have two people who have never conceived a child. Their child comes from the future as a full-grown adult.
Yes.
We're interacting with him. I'm fine. I'm with you so far. And then we kill one of the parents before the child is conceived. And he's still there.
I'm okay with him still being there because maybe they've created a timeline in which he doesn't exist, but he existed in the one he came from, so he doesn't just evaporate like in Back to the Future. But when he's referring to them publicly as mother and father, and they're clearly way younger than he is.
Yet they never established that he had told the people of Krypton, or if they did, I missed it.
Even, let's assume he tells them. Why on earth would people believe it?
Well, yes and no, because at the end, in one of the speeches, he's saying, look, I have seen the future that gets built based on this rhetoric.
So he's presumably a publicly known time traveler.
Yeah.
And people just accept that.
Yes.
But they're also in a world where cloning exists.
Yes.
And they set that up with one character, so when it's used on another one, which is one of the things I talked about before we started watching this evening, it's like, yeah, they went too far with this, but they've got this get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah. And my only question there was, which of two ways could they use the cloning?
Yes, yes. There was still some wiggle room, but you knew, and they played fair because you knew some of the plot devices they were going to use. And it's funny because there were one or two places where I felt they really missed an opportunity for just a short, hilarious scene that really could have spun a subplot that they were leaving dormant for a while up to a new level. Because when we spent one whole episode almost on Kalu, which is the home planet of Brainiac, this is where we get introduced to Lobo, who's chasing Brainiac and stuff. And we leave those Brainiac and Lobo basically on the planet. Most of Brainiac, not all. And
most of Lobo.
Well, Lobo, yeah, they do a little bit with him regenerating and stuff like that. But if at the end of that episode, it's like, oh, we think we're done with that, and you cut back to where we've left those two, because where we had left them is Lobo is trying to, we think, has just killed Brainiac. But if it turns out Lobo was still regenerating, he kills Brainiac. As he's finishing regenerating, Brainiac regenerates. Up, they fight again. They regenerate again. They fight again. And just something of, they're going to be here for a while.
Yes.
You know, that I think would have been a hilarious thing to do. I think they did a very good job adapting Lobo from the comic book to the screen. Some of the effects, while I thought they were gratuitous and rather gory, like when he's regenerating his whole body and stuff, they did that really well on a TV budget.
Yeah.
So, faithful adaptation of a character I'm not totally crazy about in the comics, but they got him, and I could see where they thought they could spin him off to another series. Don't know how, if there's an audience for it, I don't know that we're the audience.
Yeah.
And that goes back to, it's not a character I'm crazy about, but it's one that's had a ton of comics over the years. So there's a following there. Some of the other stuff they did through the course of the season, they spent a lot of time on one of the moons of Krypton and stuff. The only time we saw one of the other cities, I guess it was Kryptonopolis, it turned out to have been a dream sequence.
Yes.
But even the dream sequence, okay, that basis was the Black Mercy, which they pull from the comics. That was from one of the Superman annuals, I think it was, of kind of a what do you get for the man who has everything. And it turns out one of his villains has given Superman the Black Mercy, big flower on his chest. He's having this dream sequence as Batman, Robin, and Wonder Woman or whatever who'd gone there to give him other presents are trying to save him or something. Mm-hmm. Great story. I think it was Alan Moore who wrote it, but I could be wrong. So there's a lot of things where it was clear that they knew the comic history. They were changing some stuff. But even where they were going with Adam Strange these two seasons was in line-ish with his stuff from the comics, but it wasn't until we get to the end. He's got the jetpack. He's got a suit that looks very similar to his iconic look. Okay, they're starting to build that up. Meanwhile, the Zeta Beam device, which in the comics, it wasn't a device. It was literally a beam from the planet Ran that if you got struck by it, you'd get teleported.
Oh, okay.
So in the comics, back when this was going on in the 70s and 80s and stuff, it was one of those, he knew where the beam was fired, do the math, he knew where it would hit on Earth. So he would be, you know, racing all over the globe to be at the right spot at the right time to be able to go back to Ran, where he was this hero, ray gun, jetpack, and beautiful girlfriend, leader of the planet, the grand scientist was his mentor and stuff, versus just being some regular Joe on Earth.
Yeah.
So he had a device in this show to do it. Okay, that kind of worked. But that got borrowed by somebody later, and she's actually on that planet later.
Presumably that planet.
Guaranteed that planet. They never identify it, but at the tail end, when we cut back to there, she's going around. She goes to this cave. She sees this Omega symbol. I'm like, ooh, I didn't see that. Because to me, that brings to mind what they did in like the Justice League movie and stuff like that with Darkseid. Okay, didn't see that coming. Maybe that was a feint. Maybe they're going to go there. Had they gotten a third season, don't know. But then she's looking up and we see all these guys with wings.
Mm-hmm.
Hawkmen
mm-hmm.
from the Hawkman and Thanagar. One of the storylines they've done a lot in the last few years or a few decades is the Ran-Thanagar War.
Oh, okay.
You got two planets. Either they're sharing a solar system. Sometimes they'd shared a planet. It changes over time. Sometimes they're just in the near galaxy, so it's like they fought an intergalactic war there. So clearly, they were setting up that the Thanagarians had invaded Ran.
Interesting.
So we already had stuff going on with Kolu and Brainiac. At the end, Brainiac's heading to Earth. Oh, I guess we're going to get some Earth stuff. And then we've got one character over on Ran. We've introduced the Thanagarians. We've still got Krypton in place. So that's four planets, potentially, in a third season to bounce between.
Well, and Jor-El has been, he's a baby, but he's been kidnapped.
By Brainiac, who's heading to Earth to make him into a Superman.
And that's why Nyssa went to Ran.
Yes.
So really, season three seemed to be Seg, grandfather of Superman, trying to rescue Superman's father.
Seg-El teaming up with Lobo to go chase Brainiac.
Yeah.
While Nyssa is dealing with the Ran-Thanagar War. Cutting back to whatever's happening on Krypton with presumably at least a little bit for Adam before he gets sucked into the Ran stuff. I mean, I could see where they were kind of going for a next season.
Krypton needed a new government.
Yes. Kandor needed a new government.
True.
They set it up to where there were city-states that were very independent of each other and at times at war.
Kandor needed to replace Zod. And needed to find a balance between what was before and what was now. Because Zod got rid of the Rankless.
Yes.
Which had been a problem, but his solution was not necessarily better.
And there was a power vacuum with Zod taken out of power. Yeah. They could have leveraged Zod again next season. I think it would have been smart not to.
Yeah. But I think that's why Brainiac heading to Earth didn't really amuse me, and him having Jor-El for that matter. It was kind of a, how many seasons of Brainiac are we going to have?
I was afraid if they did a third season, they got to Earth, that the family we would encounter there, Luthor.
Mm.
It's one of the only other major Superman villains that this series hasn't touched. And by going to Earth, it allows for the superpowers, all that kind of a thing.
Yes.
And I could just see Brainiac basically telling Lionel Luthor or the equivalent, you know, Lex's father, hey, can you raise this kid? You know, or doing something like that. This season, the rebelling against Zod, it was a decent storyline, but they never, to my satisfaction, explained why did Zod travel back in time? How did he travel back in time? What was his game plan? Was he trying to subvert the Superman legacy? Did that just kind of happen?
He claimed he wanted to save Krypton from being destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
But he was so self-delusional and so manipulative that he was an unreliable narrator for me.
Agreed. He was the hero of his own story. Take from that what you will in terms of what he says is true or not. He lied many times. But while he was saying he was doing it for Krypton, that's technically not true. He was trying to save the people of Krypton.
He would say that and then kill them.
My point is, his whole plan, annex other planets, get off this planet. This planet's doomed. We can't save this planet.
That's true. You're right.
So...
yeah. Well, and in terms of social commentary, that goes to a lot of people saying, we're destroying Earth. That's why we need to be reaching out to other planets. And that's why space travel matters.
Well, and conceivably in a third season, they could have gone setting up the Science Council, going for a, you know, we've got to save the environment. We've got to, you know, re-terraform Krypton to be habitable. We need to make it sustainable and stuff. And dealing with the fallout of the moon blowing up.
Yes. You would think a moon blowing up would have definite fallout.
But they have domed cities that was shielding it.
Well, I don't mean just the physical fallout. Yes. I mean the change to gravitational forces and the literal scientific.
Yeah, but I think a lot of what would happen to Earth without the moon comes down to tidal forces and stuff like that. And when you've got a devastated planet that doesn't really seem to have any oceans, maybe it's not as big of a deal.
Interesting.
But that I think it would have been interesting in the third season for them to set up the Science Council that was eventually Krypton's doom, because they didn't listen to Jor-El. And it would be ironic if his grandfather had kind of, or actually I guess that would be great-grandfather, because it was Seg's grandfather, yeah. Val, that would be setting up the thing. There's some fun stuff they could have done.
Yeah. Well, they did fairly decent with the juxtaposition between Val and Jaxor, I guess her name is.
Yeah. Though, and she's in the comics a known villain from the Phantom Zone and stuff, but a male versus female. But
at one point, she just went walking off into the tunnels of the moon to live on her own in exile.
The fact we never saw her in that final battle, I think, was a missed opportunity, because presumably she just wandered off on the moon and died when it blew up.
Well, let's start more basic than that. She wandered off into the tunnels of a place that doesn't grow food, doesn't have water,
but has civilians that she could have infiltrated and lived with.
Okay.
Because they mention the civilians and stuff like that a number of times.
Yeah, that's true. Later they do, especially. Okay.
But there are a couple of times like that where the storytelling was good, but far from flawless. When they reintroduced Dev M this season.
Oh, that was not good for me.
We both thought it was Lyta's uncle, effectively.
Yeah.
Her mother's brother and stuff, because we'd just seen the dream sequence with what we didn't realize at first was a dream sequence. And then we cut to a guy. It's like, oh, I guess that looks close enough. But if they had done a better previously on and reset up Dev M and then reintroduced.
Yeah.
Because part of it is, I mean, it's a bit between seasons.
Yeah. Well, and last we'd seen him, he was a Sagittarii in uniform, and here he is a civilian outcast in the Outlands.
Yes. We didn't have him in that context, whereas we had the uncle in that context.
Yeah.
And people switch status quos in this series a lot.
Yes.
Going from restaurant owner to Sagittarii, you know, soldier or whatever for Kem. Mm-hmm. And they did it believably, and they set up the go-betweens and stuff. It's just, oh yeah, I've got to remember that.
Well, I found it interesting going from Sagittarii to not being able to stomach being a rebel, but not being loyal to Zod, and trying to navigate that middle ground.
Yeah, yeah.
That one was interesting to me. Some of the characters had interesting, even if it was merely progression versus an out-and-out arc.
Yeah, I would say it's a little hard to chart the arc for the characters, because I didn't feel so much they grew, but that they had a plot line and adapted to the events that happened. And it may seem like semantics there, but there are some shows where you go from a character being a social misfit to fitting in, and they grow as a person.
Yeah.
There's other shows like this where it's like, this was their status quo here because these things happened. That's no longer viable. Their situation changes, but it's not like they really changed.
Yeah.
It's just this is now where they fit.
Well, Nyssa was the character that I thought we had, I'm trying to think how far is it. We saw the most evolution in her, so we became far more sympathetic to her over the course of the two seasons.
Did we see evolution in her this season, or did we see her cunning and survival instinct just play out in over different situations?
The reason I say evolution is because in the beginning of season one, she was purely cold-hearted.
True, true.
Whereas in season two, when she finds out that Zod lied to her about the oxygen breathers.
Yes, she felt genuinely bad about that.
She felt betrayed, and she was upset that she betrayed the rebels.
Well, and also first season, she would have wanted Seg at any cost, regardless of who it hurts.
Yes.
When he's heartbroken over what had happened to Leeta, and then that kind of reverses, she's supportive.
Yeah.
She's hurt, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah, there's some growth there. But there are also a couple of things that, and I know they'd set it up before, but like in the fight scene on the moon when they're taking the ship, she is just this warrior. Mm-hmm. And it's not that they hadn't set that up, it's just that's really impressive for somebody who is mainly a verbal warrior before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She certainly had the cunning, but man, she's taking out Sagittarii left, right, and center. Sagittarii are the elite warriors of Kandor. Mm-hmm. Now, the other thing that they set up in flashback when we get the origin of Doomsday is there was a member of House El and House Zod that created Doomsday. And I really felt they had those two characters in the wrong house.
Yes.
Because it was the member of House Zod who was almost a little squeamish and, no, we've got to stop this. We've gone too far.
Yeah.
And that member of House El that's, oh, we're going to kill him again and resurrect him and keep going.
Yeah.
And the way they'd set up the two houses, that felt inverted.
Yes.
And to me, it stained the House of El a little bit, mm-hmm. more than a little bit.
Well, and because they did the time frame with using the jargon of Krypton, I couldn't tell how long ago it really was.
I thought when they first did the flashback, they said 1,000 years ago.
They said a 1,000 cycles or...
I took it as years.
Okay. And I assumed that was what they meant. I just wasn't sure. Because I was trying to figure out how many generations removed is this from Val.
I would say maybe 5.
I was trying to figure out if his house has been trying to make amends ever since.
Yeah, I would think so. And again, given we're presumably 200 years back and we get the birth of Jor-El this season, 1,000 years ago could only be 4 or 5 generations.
Yeah.
Which on the one hand may seem like a lot, but on the other hand, okay, Superman, go back one generation, 200 years to Jor-El. We've got his father, Seg-El.
Who looks to be about 30.
Yeah. His parents, who got dealt with last season, and his grandfather,
Val.
Val-El. That's 5 generations right there.
Yeah.
What's funny is within 200 years.
Yes. Yeah.
Most of it during the 2 years we're dealing with.
Yeah.
So, the lifespan on Krypton, not quite sure of. They had some really good special effects. They had a lot of them.
Yes.
Because it's an alien culture, etc. The only normal-ish stuff is the blue jeans and stuff that Adam is wearing. Mm-hmm. And I felt there's more they could have and I think should have done to make us feel a little more connected to Adam. But having him as kind of the voice into or our vantage point into Krypton for the series worked. I just was really upset that they dropped the we've got to save Superman. We've got to fix this.
Yeah.
I mean, they dealt with it, but not having the visual of the cape, it took 7-8 episodes in or something before we got back to the fortress this season.
The cape disappeared after flashing to a Zod emblem. And then it's like, okay, I guess we screwed that up. We give up.
I don't think we even got a clip of that in the previously on stuff this season.
I think we got in the very first episode as just a reminder, this is why the show started.
I think we may have gotten it at the beginning of I'm Adam, I'm here to save your grandson or whatever. but we never got, like, particularly the clip there at the end of this first season with, okay, it's evaporated, it flipped, and all that.
Yeah.
So there was, they had, according to IMDb's trivia page, like a 7 or 8 year plan for this. I respect that in terms of you've got a game plan. I disrespect that in terms of you really think you're going to get 7, 8 seasons out of this?
Yeah.
I mean, sure, Smallville went for 10. Arrow is going for 7.5.
But you really have to hook the audience, and not just with the first episode of the season. It's something that writers in various mediums continue to discover, is you have to have hooks throughout.
You've got to keep pulling people through not only the episode or installment they're in, but through that next one.
Yeah.
You've got to give them enough of, wow, I can't wait to see what happens next. And
killing Lita, for me, was a jump the shark moment.
Not only that, when we get to the episode where it starts with the dream sequence stuff, we're both like, she's dead.
Yeah.
This has to be a dream sequence, but she's dead. So they had to have cloned her, brought her back, whatever. Okay, you've already telegraphed that.
Well, and it didn't look like it could be Seg's dream sequence.
Absolutely not. It was from her perspective.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't have made sense from his perspective.
Yeah.
So there were a few things like that that they did well, but they could have, and I think should have, done a little bit better on.
Well, and for a while, when we had trace amounts of Brainiac left in Seg, I kept asking you, so does this mean that there were trace amounts of Brainiac in the bloodline of House Elf?
That was one of the things we talked about. I said they had to kind of get rid of that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, when he... Because at that point, we didn't know Jor-El had already been born. He was going under a different name. They renamed the kid. That could have turned, you know, into a hereditary thing. And I'm like, wow, that would be a wild concept to... Adam thinks he's fixed everything, goes back to the future, and you've got a Brainiac Superman.
Yeah. Well, and for the longest time, with the baby that had been born, I kept asking him, how come we don't know this character name?
Yeah.
You know, so there was just lots of stuff where I was trying to take the continuity I know that, yeah, I admit they aren't honor bound by, but I thought they were going to stay close to.
What is your basis for that continuity you know?
More of it, admittedly, is the TV shows and the movies, but I was going by very basic stuff, like first you have Jor-El.
Kind of the iconic Superman stuff that's true across everything.
I thought so.
That's fair. For me, where these shows and comics get more confusing than for a casual fan, such as I'd say you'd fall into, is I've got rattling in what's left of my brain the continuity from Crisis, post-Flashpoint, which they've redone a few times, the various Elseworlds and one-shots and stuff like that, you know, his adventures with the Legion, his adventures without, plus the original Superman show back in the 60s or whenever that I watched in reruns, Lois and Clark, Smallville, the current stuff over in Supergirl, plus the movies, plus the various animated series, plus even Superboy and the Legion of Superheroes or Young Justice. There's so many competing versions of the history of Krypton that it's like they've given a first name, Dev. I'm assuming Dev M, but, well, he's white. This guy's black. Okay, fine. They could recast. But in the comics, he's like 1,000 years in the future because he's with the Legion of Superheroes. You know, so when they do... time juggling, like here they use Lobo 2,000 years earlier than he's present day seen in the comics. Not to say that's wrong, but okay, it's a little different. It you can make it work in the continuity if you wanted to. Likewise with Brainiac, hey, he's been around forever. It's not like he was a new thing present day. Okay, fine. Zod, you've said flat out time traveled,
but you haven't told us how, and the whys don't make sense.
The fact that we never got an episode this season that gave some clarity as to how he went from current day Superman era back to Krypton. How did he come up with the plan, the time machine, whatever? Mm-hmm. Why is Adam Strange chasing him?
Yeah.
You know, and even at that point, he originally, I think Adam knew somebody had gone back, but not who.
Yeah, or at least he wasn't saying who.
He wasn't saying, yeah. But man, we could have gotten an episode that had Zod and Adam Strange and just kind of their backstory prior to season one. Mm-hmm. That could really have shown a new light on everything.
Yes.
Either have made Adam more heroic or just, hey, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time kind of thing. Because at the end of this season, they're giving him the classic backstory of he was going to Ran, he was the hero, all that kind of stuff. Just through a few lines of exposition. It's like, oh, maybe he actually was a superhero of some sort. But what happened with that? He's not going back to Ran. There's more to be told.
Yeah.
And I think when you're doing a show, because there's always the, oh, writing a TV show is just like a book. It's not. With a book, you have complete control as to how many pages it is, when you end. Now, granted, you may have contractual issues, whatever. But by and large, you're not at the mercy of some actor wants out, or you've got to recast, or you can't afford the budget for that, or the network says, give me more or less episodes, or you're getting another season, or you're not getting another season. There's a trick to writing a show, and some people have really mastered this, where you've got a beginning, middle, and end of a season. It gets to a sense of, yep, this is a good pausing point for end of season break. Got it. Come back, and there's stuff to do. Mm-hmm. Sometimes telegraphed, well, we've got to pick up with this because we've finished the task, but not the mission.
Well, we did a lot of that reach a conclusion with the Seg, Lita, Janna, Dev, Val, and Adam situation there on Krypton.
We covered a lot of it, but the Jor-El stuff being missing.
Exactly.
Mandated that had to be an arc for next season. Mm-hmm. And then the Ran Thanagar stuff mandated that had to be at least an episode or two.
Yeah.
And likewise, where they left off the first season meant this season had to be dealing with General Zod. There's still the open question about Brainiac. So I think, again, there's an art to getting to where you've got enough conclusion and satisfying story chunk at the end of a season, but not a the end, overdone, it's final.
Yes.
To where you're like starting in a rebuilding phase of the first episode of the next season, you know, and having something where there's continued stories to tell that clearly springboard off the previous stuff, but doing it in a way that you haven't locked yourself in, because it's unsatisfying that, yeah, they've taken care of Zod. Superman is not on a good path to happen at this point in this universe.
Yeah.
You know, and the tease about the Ran Thanagar War there at the end, I mean, that was like a few seconds or whatever. And I'm like, that's interesting. I'm curious about that. I'll never see that.
Yeah.
So doing that kind of a thing as almost a ploy to get that next season, I get why they do it, but I do not respect that approach. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's suckering us in and the people funding the production of it to that next season.
Yeah.
And if you're telling a good enough story, it's like, we've watched an episode, we've got to watch that next one now. Not because it's left on a cliffhanger.
Right.
But because it's like, wow, this got some momentum. I want to see what happens next. This was so good. They're going to follow it up with something better.
Right.
And I've watched some shows where marathoning it, it's like, you know what? I've watched a few episodes. I'm going to go do something else for a little bit. I'll come back to it. Others where, man, how soon can I get to that next episode? And some of those are even episodic shows.
Yeah.
That don't have a continued arc that I'm looking to see what continues on that plot line. It's just, I want to see more of those characters. Mm-hmm. And this had some good characters. It had a lot of, it was more plot centric than character centric though.
Yeah. It was reliant on you liking Seg.
You liking Seg and Seg being a Superman analog.
Yes.
And man, they played into that in a few cases, particularly when he's in the Fortress of Solitude naming his son Jor-El, get the Superman kind of fanfare going. And then at the end of the season, when he's telling General Zod, would you like to step outside?
Yeah.
I mean, that was direct from the Superman movies.
Well, and when he takes his jacket off, almost like he's revealing a Superman costume because he has his house emblem on his chest. Yeah.
Well, and to me, that was also a matter of Christopher Reeve kind of going from Clark to Superman.
Yes.
Standing up a bit straighter, doing the pose, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm not the pushover. Let's fight.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and keeping the fight fair until Zod pulled a knife in a fist fight.
Yes. Yes. As fair as it can be when Zod, you know, kind of sort of towered over Seg.
He kept it fair until Zod cheated.
Yeah. I was fully expecting Zod was going to do some serious damage. He's just a bigger,
muscular
guy. He's a warrior.
Well, and Colin Samu, who played him, did a good job with what he was given.
Yes, he did a great job. He also played Walter in the first season of Arrow.
Yeah. There was one scene where I was teasing you. He was doing half Heil Hitler and half let me address my stormtroopers.
Yes. Yes. He played the kind of that Supreme Emperor sort of character well.
Yeah.
And still had a sense of almost humanity about him.
His humanity seemed to come from having both mommy and daddy issues.
I think it also came from the fact that he felt he was the hero of the piece.
Yes.
He was saving Krypton. It was a holy mission. It was the righteous thing to do.
And no price was too high to pay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I felt in the episode first season where we got some of Lita's upbringing in House Zod of no mercy by any means necessary, how that's baked into their family culture and such, that by extension, it gave that to General Drew Zod.
It did, yes. But we were also given reason to believe that if Seg had actually been part of his upbringing, he'd be a different person.
Yes. Well, it's funny, though, because we got Lita, we got her mother, Jaina. Her father at one point in the flashback sequence when Jaina and the brother were out the outpost or whatever. So we got numerous generations of Zods, mm-hmm. at least four.
Yeah.
So anytime you've got to say, well, we're going to tell a Superman story, but we're not going to use Superman. We're going to go back two generations. And from there, we're also going to start back two generations. I mean, it's getting to the point where it's not only this, but we've had, I don't say Batman shows, but you could argue the 66 Batman TV show counts as a primetime TV show, definitely. I would also say Birds of Prey was kind of a Batman show. Mm-hmm. We're going to have Batwoman. But you know what? Let's back that up. Let's tell the prequel to that. Let's tell Gotham.
Yeah.
You know what? Let's back up from that. Let's go tell Pennyworth.
Yeah.
You know, we've gotten that Superman origin. You know what? Let's before we get Superman, let's do Lois and Clark when Superman's just starting out. You know what? Let's go further back. Let's tell him it's in Smallville. You know, let's go further back. Let's go back to Krypton. There's a point of this is ridiculous. I mean, they're not bad stories. I've loved a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's as if they feel they've exhausted the story potential of like Superman himself. So now you've got to tell Superman adjacent stories, be it Supergirl, be it his grandfather, whatever. And I don't feel that's true. I think here, the fun part was we got to explore the culture of Krypton.
Yes.
And they did a good job on that. I'm not going to say they did a brilliant job on that, but it was good. It was solid. Yeah. But it does make me wonder, have they gone back as many steps as they can before they kind of fall off the cliff behind them?
You know, when they first announced this show, I knew some people who were saying, Krypton sounds great, but why does it have to be Superman's family? Why can't we simply explore Krypton? Then we aren't bound by the continuity we know because it's elsewhere on the planet.
Well, if it had been on Krypton and it had been a few generations earlier, if you'd done that and it didn't tie into Superman, it's like, well, then what's the point? Why call it Krypton? And I think if they were to do another show of this ilk, it would be the founding of the House of El.
Mm.
And I think there's some fun stuff you can do there, but what is it about Krypton itself other than it gave us Superman? And one of the things they were kind of exploring is, yeah, Superman was raised by the Kents. A lot of that is in his upbringing, but how much of nature, how much is nurture?
Exactly.
This was covering the nature aspect.
Yeah.
He was an L the way Seg is an L.
Yeah. Well, and Val.
Absolutely.
When he gave Nyssa the codex, because mm-hmm. he understood why she needed it, but when he coded it so it couldn't be weaponized. Now, I was disappointed in him.
Well, it's funny because I felt Val also acted as a proxy for Jor-El, the wise Kryptonian mentor.
But what disappointed me was he put something in there that was easy to spot and obvious that prevented it from being weaponized. I felt he should have put two things in there. One that was easy to spot so they'd stop looking for the...
But then a backup,
Yeah. I thought he was that smart. He knew they would check for something.
I think the one that was that smart was the hologram version.
Oh, yes. I liked that one.
We even got that one again this season.
But I was disappointed in that one for putting the nanites into a system.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty stupid.
I mean, you take Brainiac's nanites, put them into your computer system, and don't expect them to try to take control of something?
You don't quarantine them. You don't burn them off. You don't do, you know, something.
Yeah.
To me, that's a, you've used the thing, it's got the nanites in it, you dispose of that and incinerate it.
Yeah.
Kick it into the Phantom Zone or something, yeah. Yeah, there were a couple of times where I felt the things they were doing, it's like, come on, you know this is going to happen. Mm-hmm. Just because we've watched enough TV shows, we know how stories play out.
Yeah.
It was fun. I think they had a really good cast. I thought the one who did Val, he did a great job.
He really did, yeah.
He had, if they needed to cast somebody as Obi-Wan Kenobi for like a Star Wars TV show or something, he's the guy.
Yes.
He just nailed the role. I felt Seg was Superman-ish enough that you could see, I could see how his grandson could be Superman. You know, I could see how he kind of sort of could be, but... Mm-hmm.
But he was balanced well by Lita and by the actress who played her.
Yes.
So you could see how the two of them came together, and the same with Nyssa.
Yes. Nyssa, I thought, was very talented. I don't think they had a weak person in the main cast.
No. The guy who played Cam had a great sense of humor.
Yes.
He did some great comic relief.
He was believable as the enterprising friend, and surprisingly believable when he was that soldier.
In part because he was the conscripted soldier.
Yes.
And he played that well.
Yeah. Reluctant, but competent. He took advantage of the training.
Well, if he was conscripted, he was going to stay alive.
Yes.
He was a survivor.
Yeah.
And when they did the flashback to Devim and his going AWOL, I liked having Cam in all of that.
I did, but it felt...
forced.
Coincidental.
Yeah.
Contrived.
I'll give you that, but it made sense in terms of someone conscripted, someone who was going to understand wanting to not kill the innocents,
yes,
and someone who would help you get out.
They needed to use Cam because who else would have filled those roles in a way we would have believed?
Yeah.
And it set up the, we're going to put the soldiers or the Sagittari in the mines and all that stuff.
Yes.
And they did a good job here giving us the information we would need for them to do later plot points.
Yeah.
They set up cloning with Nyssa to where when they use it later, oh yeah, we know about this. Now, where did cloning come from?
Yeah.
You know? So I appreciate they tried to play fair.
Well, they used things and used them believably as opposed to sprinkling breadcrumbs that feel like obvious foreshadowing.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that.
And there is an art to that that's hard to do. Mm-hmm. Of playing fair without telegraphing to sprinkle it in early enough. Oh, you don't really notice it, but oh yeah, they did set that up. Mm-hmm. And not be so heavy-handed. Well, of course they're going that way. That having been said, again, when we sat down this evening to watch the final four episodes of the season, there were a few things. Now, we didn't say it's going to be this and get it 100% accurate, but we knew the basic direction they had available to them. And I think called the things we called accurately enough.
Yeah.
So, again, I enjoyed it. Sorry to see they're not going to get a third season. Not going to say I'm horribly surprised.
No. By the end of six episodes, I understood why they didn't have a third season. I understood why viewership fell off.
Yeah, I think it's they didn't have things moving fast enough. And by setting it on another planet 200 years ago, all that kind of a stuff, it's easy to get a little disconnected from it.
Well, in one of the final four episodes that we watched tonight, I think I asked you at one point, you know, did the episode run short? Were they just sort of filling in with footage? And you said, no, I think they're trying to give us something they think we need. They're just going really slow about
it. There were a few times I felt they were a little more cinematic than they needed to be.
Yeah.
And that I don't think stood them well.
Well, and in fact, in the scenes I'm thinking of, if they'd had a voiceover accompanying it, so we knew someone was sharing a memory.
That should have been Lita, here's what happened.
Yes. Then the footage would have made sense. It would have felt like it belonged and it would have been, oh, that's what we're seeing. Okay.
Yeah, that's a good place where a voiceover really would have helped.
Yeah.
It would have personalized the story. It really would have given the actress a good chance to sell some of the story points too.
Yeah.
So, again, not terribly surprised. Sorry to see it go, and frustrated that they'd set up some what could have been a very interesting third season, even if it was very much a two plot line kind of a thread that we're never going to see.
Yeah.
It would be nice if DC would work with the writers as either an original graphic novel or something like that, and do a Krypton season 3 in comic book form.
Very true.
So don't expect that to happen, but it would be nice.
Yeah.
Anything else?
I think that's it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.